Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Grenville Strategic Royalty Corporation's first quarter 2015 results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. If anyone has difficulties hearing the conference, you may press star zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that today's discussions may contain forward-looking statements that reflect current views with respect to future events. Any such statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those projected in the forward-looking statements. For more information on Grenville's risks and uncertainties related to these forward-looking statements, please refer to the company's Management Information Circular dated April 16, 2015, which is available on SEDAR. Today's call is being recorded May 13, 2015. I would now like to turn the meeting over to William Tharp, Chief Executive Officer of Grenville Strategic Royalty Corporation. Please go ahead, Mr. Tharp.
Thank you, operator, and good morning to everyone, and thank you for participating on today's call. I'm joined today by Steve Perry, our Executive Chairman, and Donica Rahill, our Chief Financial Officer. I will provide the highlights of the quarter, and Donica will then provide a financial review, which will then be followed by a Q&A session. Overall, the portfolio performed well in the quarter, and the business is off to a solid start in 2015. During Q1, we recorded revenue of $1.6 million and adjusted EBITDA of $1.1 million. With today's release, we also declared our monthly dividend for May of 0.42 cents, which represents 5 cents per share on an annualized basis. We established this level in February based on a couple of key factors. Number one, our comfort level with our pipeline of prospects, and number two, our capital available to deploy. Based on a conservative target of deploying approximately $2 million per month, the 5 cent annualized dividend equates to a payout ratio of 80% as of the end of 2015. Based on the visibility into our growth rate, we were and remain comfortable with this target. While our free cash flow in the quarter was affected by the timing of certain working capital items, as Donica will describe, the dividend level established is sustainable and one that we would expect to increase over time as we continue to grow and concurrently diversify the portfolio. On our last call, we talked about deliberately adjusting the pace of investment activity in the fourth quarter based on volatility in the global equity markets. We also emphasized our diversification strategy and ongoing rebalancing of the portfolio across industry sectors, countries, and currencies. Our investment pace during the fourth quarter of 2014 and January 2015 slowed relative to the second and third quarters, but the overall pace remains in line with our expectations of 1 to 3 investments per month, including follow-ons. We've seen an uptick since January through to the end of the quarter and have averaged a rate of approximately 2.33 investments per month for the quarter. Our rolling 3-month average investment per month rose to almost $2.7 million in April, up substantially from February and March. Our target is to track close to $3 million per month, subject to availability of capital. The improved portfolio performance was underscored by material gains in our other non-IFRS performance measures. Our rolling 3-month average investment per transaction surpassed $1 million as of the end of March, reflecting the slower months of December and January. Of the three main non-IFRS measures we present in our reporting material, this one has the greatest potential to move without impacting our core fundamentals, as long as the royalty revenue per million and average investment pace track, or pace, track according to our targets. An accretive investment is accretive regardless of the scale of the investment. Perhaps the most important measure is average royalty revenue per million invested. This figure climbed to $262,000 as of March, from $243,000 in January and $244,000 in February. Put another way, our portfolio IRR is tracking to 26.2% in March, well ahead of our closest peer. Our target is to sustain greater than $200,000 in royalty revenue per royalty revenue per million on an ongoing basis. We target returns of 25 to 40% on an IRR basis, which positions us well ahead of our peers on a portfolio basis. Looking at the new company investment activity in the quarter, we completed a $500,000 investment into Humble Abode, a pure online retailer located in San Jose, California, designed to provide a digital interface to over 80 furniture manufacturers. Also, during the quarter, we invested $1.725 million into InteriorMark, a leading online furniture retailer with a core focus in the home theater seating marketplace. This deal also carries an option to invest another $1.25 million if agreed to by both parties. Online furniture retailers are capturing significant market share from traditional bricks and mortar furniture stores, more so every year as consumers become more familiar with the benefits of online purchasing. We see this sector as a means of investing in the stable, durable goods marketplace. We also made $1 million US dollar investment, or $1 million Canadian dollar investment into WatchIt, with an option to advance an additional $1 million. WatchIt is a Canadian specialty retailer and franchisor that offers mid-price brand name watches, sunglasses, accessories, and watch repair services, which is a high-margin business. We're excited about the opportunity to partner with the company as they continue to build their footprint across Canada. New company deal overall was solid in April and May of 2015 as well, with two new royalty agreements and three follow-on investments completed in that period, totaling 4.4. Follow-ons overall during the first quarter right up until the until this call have been material for us, with five follow-ons during the period totaling about $2 million. Together, this brings Grenville's portfolio to 34 investments into 23 individual investees, with eight investees having received follow-on investments. Our strategy continues to gain the support of the capital markets. During the first quarter, we completed a bought deal for $11.5 million in gross proceeds, and we raised another $13.8 million in total gross proceeds through a bought deal in the last month. I'll now have Donica Rahill, Grenville's Chief Financial Officer, provide an overview of our financial results for the quarter. Donica.
Thank you, Bill. In the first quarter, we achieved strong financial results. We recorded revenue of $1.6 million, our highest ever quarterly total. Royalty payment income comprised 97% of the revenue in the period. Reported operating expenses were negative $700,000 for Q1 2015. We recorded an unrealized FX gain of $1,261,000 during the quarter related to royalty agreements acquired in US dollars. Excluding this, operating expenses came in at approximately $185,000 per month. We manage our business in a highly disciplined manner with minimum operating costs and a focus on profitability. Based on existing operations, we believe there is significant scale within the business operations to manage additional investments with minimum incremental costs. Looking ahead, we estimate operating expenses to run in the range of $1.9 million and $2.4 million on an annualized basis in Q2 2015. We recorded adjusted EBITDA of $1.1 million for Q1, our highest quarterly total ever. And we generated free cash flow of $165,000 for Q1, which is down from the prior quarter. Free cash flow was affected by the timing of a few working capital items. The end of the month happened to fall this period just prior to receiving our GST refund and a royalty payment receivable, each of which were received in April rather than March. Management is confident in the ability of the business to generate free cash flow on an ongoing basis. As of March 31, 2015, our royalty agreements acquired and loan portfolio stood at $30.7 million. Working capital was $15.9 million and our cash position was $15.7 million. Based on the bought deal completed May 7, we have approximately $24 million in available capital today. In summary, we have the financial resources to deliver on the growth opportunities in front of us, both in terms of royalty expansions and new royalty agreements. I now turn it back over to Bill for his closing thoughts.
Thanks, Donica. Q1 represented a solid start to 2015, and we remain focused and disciplined, growing a balanced and diversified portfolio of quality investments. We've now deployed more than $30 million to date. We hold 23 positions in 34 investments in a diverse group of small to medium North American enterprises. While our portfolio is currently weighted towards defensive names, we're bullish on our prospect pipeline. We continue to believe the opportunity for a royalty-generating investor that seeks SMEs outside of the resource, pharma, and film industries is a greenfield space. We have a significant opportunity to scale our portfolio by providing growth capital to these businesses. The reception in the market has been excellent, and we continue to find compelling investment opportunities that will allow Grenville to deliver on our IRR targets and investee companies to achieve their growth ambitions. Take Dove Cleaners, for example, a local Toronto company. We announced a $1.3 million investment in Dove in April, with an option for an additional $700,000. The team at Dove have built a robust business through exceptional customer service and meticulous focus on quality. With our capital, they have plans to expand significantly through acquisition and development of new stores. As the CEO, Danny Zaref, says, Grenville's capital and hands-off approach is a perfect fit with our growth plans. As we continue to familiarize the capital markets with our business model and deliver on our financial objectives, we believe Grenville will be rewarded with a valuation that reflects our fundamentals, leading returns from a growing portfolio of stable and diversified investments. We look forward to updating you during the year as we continue to expand and diversify the portfolio, meeting the financing needs of growing, well-managed businesses while delivering an attractive return to our shareholders. At this time, we would now like to take your questions. Operator, please provide instructions and open the lines for any questions. Thank you.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, press the pound key. Your first question comes from the line of Trevor Johnson with National Bank. Your line is open.
Hey, morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Trevor.
Good morning, Trevor.
Just wondering, when you look at the move from Jan-Feb to March on average return per million deployed, can you just give us a little bit of color on what's driving that and maybe any thoughts on trends going forward if you might be able to eclipse that number?
I think part of it, Trevor, is a seasonal effect that we're going to see in companies. These are small, privately held companies, kind of like to go to bed in December and wake up in January. So I think there's a bit of a flow on that basis. And that tracks because we're 30 days delayed. So really the end of March number is the prior month. But I think and that's just a natural deal flow, a deal flow seasonality we're going to see, I think, in our marketplace. I think it's manifest in this area.
If I'm not mistaken, didn't you mention, though, that Q4 for these types of companies is typically their strongest from a revenue standpoint?
Yeah. I think, again, we're one factor we're going to start to measure more. We now have more data sets within the portfolio, Trevor.
Yeah.
So data sets actually starts to give us the patterns and trends. The objective is a highly uncorrelated portfolio. So with that objective in mind, we don't know what the relationships will be in the overall broad number.
Gotcha.
So we don't know what that effect is going to be.
Okay. Just in terms of potential, I guess we had talked before about maybe there's a liquidity event or some of your companies maybe looking to do some things. Just curious if there's any updates with regards to maybe getting some of your capital back from some of your partners.
Yeah, again, that's as you know, that's a zone that we can only go so far in discussions on, but great question. We've had, as I think the market's becoming aware of, really positive conversations with some of the portfolio companies. Most of the companies do not have a right to buy out their option, their royalty agreement. Now, notwithstanding that, we're in the business of facilitating and helping small companies grow. So we don't want to be seen to be part of a problem. We want to be part of a solution. So if a company approached us and said we're interested in a buyout under the following terms, there's probably a range in there that makes sense for us. But our core objective is to build a long-term perpetual like a long-tail optionality-based portfolio, though, Trevor. But if there are exceptional opportunities where we can realize a very, you know, tidy return back to the shareholders, we'd clearly be interested in considering those.
And can you highlight any partners that are kind of outperforming maybe your expectations or really torquing that average return per million deployed?
Yeah, there are one or two at, you know, out of a portfolio. What's nice to see in a portfolio of 23, you're going to get a bell curve. You know, within the bell curve, we've got some at the higher end where the revenues are moving up quite handsomely. Then we've got the kind of the larger block in the middle, the conservatives, steady eddies. Then what's interesting, we've got one or two where the revenues may feel like they're slower, but they're batting, they're hunting for elephants. So I think over a period of time, you'll see a bit of a, you know, a bit of a shift in there, but there are definitely one or two that are punching well above their weight.
And then just the last one, it's more housekeeping, but when you're looking at calculating your payout ratio on a go-forward basis, I just noticed that your free cash flow number, you mentioned that it includes some timing of tax and receivables. How are you guys defined? Is that the denominator for your payout ratio, or are you just curious what your thoughts are in terms of how you actually calculate what your payout ratio is going forward?
Yeah, I think Donica, do you want to respond to that one?
Yeah, Trevor. Internally, how we would determine is on the net income basis.
Oh, it's a payout on net income.
Correct.
Okay. Perfect, guys. Congrats on the quarter, and all the best.
Trevor, thanks for the questions.
Your next question comes from the line of James Reed of Haywood Securities. Your line is open.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning, James.
Good to see
you on the West Coast.
Yeah, just a little bit. I was just wondering, just kind of long term, have you guys been evaluating the prospect at all of securing a credit line or warehousing type facility to fund the deal flow on the front end? If you could just speak to that and the availability of this type of financing out there for a company your size.
Yeah, definitely, James. Great question. As you know, if we can tap the marketplace where we can adjust our weighted average cost of capital, and that's the, you know, if we can get into the larger credit markets, we're clearly, you know, interested in going down that path if we're able to. It's a function of economy of scale, because those things typically don't work well at 5, 10s, and 20s. They work well at 25, 50, 100, 250, or a billion. We're not going to be at the high end of the equation. The higher end gets you the lower average cost of capital. So we're interested in moving down that path to see what's available, definitely. This last equity round, we actually did quite well in bringing our weighted average cost of capital down, but that is one of the holy grails for us. I think Steve has a comment, too.
Yeah, just a quick comment, James. This is an area where Bill has considerable expertise and a great network, so and he's been a champion for the concept of doing this at some point in the company's history. So I'm pretty confident that we have the internal capabilities to put something like this together in what I would call pretty nicely well-profiled market with well-profiled market players. So pretty confident it's something that is on our radar screen for the future when scale fits with that kind of investment strategy.
Excellent. All right, well, that's all for me. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, James.
Your next question comes from the line of Chris Lehler of GMP Securities. Your line is open.
Oh, hi, guys.
Morning, Chris.
Just wondering, as your portfolio develops, how is it, if your risk tolerance has really changed at all? Just looking at the companies that you probably have more companies to be selective with in terms of your pipeline, but I was just also wondering if given your diversification, if you're able to take on riskier companies as well.
That's an interesting topic for a long conversation. Steve here. Basically, I would say our risk tolerance is higher, but our risk appetite is lower. We have intentionally de-risked our portfolio over time. You can see in the January numbers this notable low. That notable low comes as a result of the team deciding not to proceed with an investment that had all the earmarks of something we could definitely do, but we just felt from a risk management perspective, at the last minute, we decided not to do it. So my belief is that as we grow, we are offered better and better quality deals. That's factual. We can see that today. And that means that our risk profile in each in the investment portfolio overall will continue to drop. The next question is, will we decide to take on some higher growth, what we used to call the high growth part of the portfolio? We've mentioned companies like 1UP Games as an example that has that kind of a mix. Our belief is probably not, that our 25% return is what we're really focused on, and where we can see that in these steady 80 deals that we can do all day long, why not keep doing that? So my belief is we'll stay very disciplined on a conservative investment strategy rather than taking higher risk over time.
Okay. And now that you're a year plus in on some of your investments, you know, how do the earlier investments look, and how are they kind of panning out relative to expectations?
Good. You know, I think good, and we've also advanced or, you know, evolved our structure too, Chris. Some of the earlier ones, one or two of our earlier ones have actually paid back, FlyTech, for example, has paid back 100% of the original capital. So it's now falling into kind of a band return of not less than 42%, not greater than, say, 70, 72%. So that's an early stage, and that was a bit of a test structure for us. And then subsequent deals would be, you know, would be kind of the, you know, the W modes, the blue drops, the companies like that, all doing really well. And those are the earlier stage ones. And I think we've, the team's stronger, our team ability to filter deals more efficiently is getting stronger. So it's tougher for companies to come into our trap line and survive, actually, quite candidly. But it's been a good evolution, and I would think it will go from strength to strength over on a year-to-year basis.
Okay, great. Looking at the competitive landscape, can you talk a bit about, you know, most of your deals, are you seeing competition? You know, what is the main competition that you're kind of seeing from other capital providers? And can you just talk about your success rate, or are there some deals, you know, that you're losing out to, and what types of capital providers you're losing out to?
I'd say, Steve, here again, I'd say we rarely see competition. We more often see collaboration. We have mezzanine lenders who typically like to work with us, and so that's the more common frame. There's just a very strong lack of this quasi-equity type of capital in the marketplace, so we just really don't see competition. The only place we would see it occasionally is where we're competing with a venture capital firm on a deal, and candidly, if a venture capitalist likes it because it's got 100% growth and has technology risk, we probably don't like it. So we tend to judge not to go forward. So we would continue to see very little direct competition for our product.
I think the other plus that we see in that area, Chris, is we really do strive to have our capital be collaborative capital. We're not a silver bullet. We're part of the capital mix. We can also be used very effectively by the CEOs to adjust the cost of capital around the table. Sometimes the other players don't like that because we literally, we free the entrepreneur, lower covenants, don't sit on the board, no shareholders agreement. So we really empower the CEOs and the stakeholders very materially. So on that basis, when we, you know, if there's hardcore competition where somebody wants to compete on price, we have another 32 buses on the road at any one point in time. We're okay with that.
Great. And just lastly, on the expense kind of guidance range that you gave, a little higher than what you were running at previously. Can you just talk about your expenses and personnel requirements and stuff like that?
Yeah. But basically, at the moment, we are approximately running in line what our plan was for the year. We probably would see going forward, you know, we've outlined in our Q2 that there will be a slight increase in the range of operating expenses. But basically, we would expect to operate around 185,000 per month for Q2.
And Chris, I think that's been fairly well inside of the range that we've been discussing for the year, you know, kind of the step up from where we were last year. We'll also be putting on probably a dual team on the deal flow side of the equation. So we're in advanced discussions with one or two people on that side. So that will take our deal velocity instead of 1 to 3, maybe it's 1.5 to 4, or it's like it'll step it up a bit, and then the dollar placement capability will go up by a dollar amount. But when you're making as much of a return on these assets, you don't want to be kind of penny wise and pound foolish and not put the right systems and the right people in place. Systems investments is also a very important focus where Donica is taking a great lead on that, and having run a $1.7 billion portfolio, I think we'll put something very effective in place. There's some really good things formulating at this stage. So again, if we can focus on the longer term, we should be at the margin of 90%, you know, overall as we perform over the years.
All right, thanks. Thanks for the color, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
Your next question comes from the line of Jeff Fenwick of Cormark Securities. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Morning, Jeff.
I just wanted to start with the run rate of the royalty revenue per million invested here. It ticked up a little bit. Just trying to get a sense of the split here between underlying revenue growth in the portfolio companies versus maybe some other factors like seasonality that could be in the mix there.
Yeah, and again, we're just analyzing some of those data points, Jeff, and it's a little early to give you kind of clear delineation on what the variation has been. We're definitely seeing some effect with, you know, December into January is lower, and that was lower from a company revenues perspective and also from a deal doing perspective. Again, entrepreneurs don't seem to be as interested in doing deals in December and January. We also had one very substantial deal that we were working on, you know, very significant hours invested in it, and we decided last minute it just didn't fit. And that's the great thing about the structure we've got. We can focus on deals, and if they don't fit right up until that last minute, we can walk because we've got such a steady volume of deals at any one point in time. That actually would have put a $3 million U.S. number in one deal in the month of January. So again, that you don't make those decisions lightly because the first question we get from the investment community is, wow, that's a big investment. Why have you done it? So it really is, so that was definitely a factor for a group effort in the earlier part, which impacted that, created that kind of dip. But I think right now we're feeling very comfortable. We've got two bought deals under our belt, year-end audited financial statements, so it's been a very busy quarter and 9 deals for just under $10 million total. So it has been quite a busy quarter.
And I guess that feeds into my second question here. I mean, with the added capital in the mix now, more deal flow, how are you feeling in terms of average deal size? It looks like you're doing a few that are getting to be a little larger. I recall in the past we sort of discussed in terms of where you're hunting that, you know, once you get above $3 million, maybe you're not quite in the wheelhouse of where you would typically be hunting. But are you thinking that average deal size might tick a little higher here?
No, I think it's, you know, if anything, there was the only one that knocked the deal number higher was two follow-ons back-to-back pretty well into above security. So that's our largest investment at this point in time. The bulk of the deals, they seem to be between, you know, that's 500 to 1 million to 2 million, and that's on a first investment basis. Often, as you know, Jeff, we'll write a term sheet, which is a $3 million deal, but we'll only fund 1.5 million. And it's two things. It's getting to know you. It's for, you know, us to get to know the companies. It's also for them to get familiar with this type of financing. It takes a little while to get your sea legs and build it into your balance sheet, income statement, and all the rest of it. Then once we're comfortable with them, we're happy to look at follow-on investments, obviously subject to them paying their bills on a consistent basis. If you don't pay the bills, it can be a little, you know, obviously those are things we have to address in a different light.
Maybe add a comment. This is one of the most important strategic things for the team here to think about. And one of the things we're becoming, I think, clearer on is that continue to do relatively small deals where if we have a problem, we have the ability to simply fix the problem or to add sufficient capital to get them over the hump is actually a great mitigator of risk in the portfolio. And so the incentive to go to deals north of $3 million is not really very high. We have capacity and capability to run at our 2 to 4 million a month range with a team, possibly with one additional deal team in place, that mean you don't have to go to bigger deals to maintain the rate. And that is probably the right way to run the fund. If you were to go back into the venture capital world, you would see that same philosophy exists. If you're running, as an example, an early stage venture fund, you don't start doing $10 million deals in that fund. You just do more of the smaller. And I think our sweet spot is going to continue to be in that sort of $1 to $3 million range for some significant period here.
Now, obviously, if there's an opportunistic investment that we can make where we see it collectively that it makes sense, and when we're at, you know, $60 million of capital, $75, $100 million of capital, even stepping up from 2.5 to 5 is a big step, but it doesn't impact the portfolio on a weighted basis. So I could see us doing things that are more kind of extraordinary type, where we're kind of stretching for some reason as time goes by, but I can't see us punching past. You know, I can't see us punching past 10 unless there's another marketplace. And there are one or two, Jeff, that we've looked at. But we've got awesome hunting where we are. Just don't break it is really what we're focused on. Keep executing and execute better.
Steady as she goes.
Steady as she goes. These are, you know, the team is really pleased with these numbers and really pleased with the performance of the portfolio. It's a hard work portfolio. It keeps us all busy. But the balance is good.
Okay, maybe just one last one there. I mean, we did chat briefly about the performance of some of your earlier investments, but how are you feeling about the overall credit quality here today and your ability to kind of foresee if there is going to be any weakness in these companies? Do you feel you've got a pretty good line of sight into how they're performing to allow you to sort of prepare for that eventuality?
Yeah, I tell you, Jeff, this is one of the stranger portfolios that I've run. We've got more granular information on a month-and-month basis than in any other portfolio structure that I've worked with, which has either been mezz debt or venture capital. We see the revenues. You can't get any closer to the heartbeat of a company than the revenues in the prior month. Now, obviously, you know, we get further information during the quarter, but you can naturally think we know what their fixed costs are. If their revenues have dipped, they're cutting into cash reserves, or vice versa. So we have a very good insight into where these companies are going on a monthly and quarterly basis. Steve?
Yeah, and just recall that in the fall when we were sort of revisiting our portfolio, we made trips to most of the companies and actually did a big update at that time. So our current visibility, I would say, is quite high. We've got a good sense of where things are. It is important just to remind on all these calls that we are building an SME portfolio, which means there are going to be winners and losers in this. That's how it works, and that's where the balance has to be. So that is a part of our story, I'm sure, going forward.
Hey, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Jeff.
Again, to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of David Quesada from Raymond James. Your line is open.
Good morning, guys.
Morning, David.
I guess maybe just some further color on your pipeline. Are you still, given where the currency, the Canada-U.S. currency rates are right now, are you at all trying to tilt the new dealing towards U.S. domiciled, or maybe some how you're thinking about that?
Yeah, I think if there's one graph that we look at is where we sit between defensive, neutral, and cyclical, David. And right now we've got a decent balance between the two. We're a little more overweight U.S. defensives at this moment in time. On a deal-by-deal basis, if you go back 12 months, if we put a deal in for $2 million, we'd shoot from one side of the chart to the other. So I think we're now in the middle range where we can overweight slightly into one zone if necessary. I think the objective overall is portfolio balance, and both economies are doing reasonably well, and then start to, you know, get more detail on how uncorrelated our portfolio is. I say this carefully, we may not care if we can get an uncorrelated enough portfolio, because that's the nature of our portfolio, is uncorrelation to the larger macroeconomic swings. So if we can just maintain that balance and understand the balance more effectively as time goes by, I don't think we have any preclusions or inclusions. It's balance on a deal-by-deal basis. Steve, I don't know, are you comfortable with that?
I think that's good. When the dollar took off to sort of the $1.27 range,
yeah,
we definitely prioritized Canadian deal flow. We got quite nervous about that degree of change. That was really earlier part of the year. Today, things are not necessarily non-volatile, but they're sufficiently back in track that it's less of a concern than it was, say, 90 days ago.
Okay, great. That's helpful. And then maybe just again on your pipeline, are there any end market kind of like industry verticals where you're seeing good opportunities these days?
Yeah, it's funny. We'll see floods of things from time to time. Like if we wanted to pull out a checkbook in the oil patch, we could go long. And candidly, there will be a good there will be some great returns in that area. There's some guys getting roughed up in that zone. But I don't. There's what we would call the shiny bauble factor. Last year we had a healthcare appetite, and we satisfied that. We're still looking. There's some great investment opportunities in that area. We went through a period where, as you saw, we did three furniture deals kind of across a continuum from manufacturing at one end to hardcore internet at the other end. I don't think we'll look at any more in that area, but that satisfied a durable goods appetite. So when markets appear from time to time, we can set up a framework around that structure. That also lends itself to, you know, what I call small consolidation opportunities in each one of those areas. If we've got a client in that space and we know of other guys in that space, we're happy to affect that introduction. We're revenue builders, right? So I don't think, Steve, is there, we don't really have any shiny, I call shiny bauble factors out there right now.
Love to fill some gaps in financial services, but hard to find. And we're spending some energy on prospecting in that area right now.
Yeah, that's interesting. Financial services is definitely on the radar screen. We don't have anything directly in that area, and we're seeing some really interesting opportunities where they're high gross margin businesses. You can a royalty fits in with a high gross margin business. It's cash flow heavy typically, depending on what the structure is, but nothing other than that, what I would think.
Okay, great.
Show us deals.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. That's all I have.
Thank you.
You have no further questions at this time. I will turn the call back over to Bill Tharp.
That's great. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for your attention early morning today, and we look forward to updates in the future.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.